Hello, I'm John Wilson. Thanks for downloading Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4. Welcome to Master Tapes and to Eliza Carthy and her father, Martin Carthy, playing Dr. McCombie from Eliza's 2002 album, Anglicana. It's a record on which traditional English folk songs are given a 21st century makeover, and it includes versions of Willow Tree, In London So Fair, and Pretty Ploughboy. It's all a whiskey on the ploughboy, he was ploughing on the sea, being neat and true. Eliza and Martin Carthy, welcome to Master Tapes.
Thank you.
And we're focusing today on Eliza's album, Anglicana, the fifth solo album in your career, Eliza, one that's packed with tales of love and loss and woe, betrayal, poison and press gangs. But to understand Eliza's music, we have to hear, of course, from Martin Carthy, the man to whom countless folk-influenced musicians over the last 50 years or so have owed a massive debt, not least Bob Dylan and Paul Simon, but more of them later. Eliza, the title Anglicana, it's a nice twist on the idea of Americana, isn't it? The idea of exploring the roots of indigenous music. But let's start with your musical roots, the roots of your family, I guess. Were you destined to be a folk musician, do you think?
I had a different answer for this about 15, 20 years ago, but yes, I think I probably was. My parents brought me up in the spirit of the continuation of the tradition, I suppose, and they never forced anything on me, which is, hopefully a surefire way of making sure that things continue. I felt that it was natural to play the music that I played and to love about us, everything that I loved. It wasn't just music, it was the fact that my mum's side of the family had come from gypsies and that we were Irish and musicians for many, many, many generations. I was brought up to be proud of that. So in a sense, there was nothing to rebel against. It was just natural. It was meant to be.
And Martin, when, of course, you and Norma Watson had been playing together and individually, was it obvious to you that Eliza would join in, that she would have to become part of the family firm?
Well, considering that she first came on a stage with us when she was six, and it was actually at the Fylde Festival, 1,500 people there, and I said, maybe not, and she said, yes, I am. and I said, when you know a song, just you come and stand with us, and when you know a song, you just pull my trousers and I'll lift you up onto my head. You can join in and that'll be fine. And after three songs, where every time she'd gone, I realised that she was going to be there for the whole set.
There was
and
no,
she knew,
no
she
stopping
knew all the words.
And that was how old? Six.
Six.
So you knew she had it then from a young age?
She'd always sung and she'd always had an aptitude for playing for anything, absolutely anything.
I used to make my own radio shows as well, didn't I? Where I would be the presenter and I would sing all the songs as well.
Well, I'll be off then.
So, you could go at the pub if you like.
What advice did you give her when it was obvious it was going to be serious and this was going to become a career?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
My advice to her was never shag the band. And I am serious.
Anybody, it's good advice. It is very, very good advice.
Were they sitting you down at home? Were you having to sing the songs around the kitchen table? How was it delivered to you at home?
Not formally in that way, no. My mum has always been... She just sings all the time. When I was little and she was, singing with her sister and the Watersons would, when they got sozzled, they'd have a... they'd have a good sing.
Girls sing so.
Well, also, I mean, there was a lot of musicians coming to stay with us, and instead of making me go to bed, they used to make me get up.
sit under the table.
I used to sit under the table and listen to it all, yeah.
And listen to, and Martin, was there a first song that you sat her down and said, you know, you have to learn something, I'm going to teach you?
I remember I taught her The Frog's Wedding, which I'd learned from Packy Byrne, The Frog and the Mouse, you know, a frog went out to woo a mouse.
I sang that at the Estdale Tournament of Song and I got a medal. You don't get medals for doing gigs anymore. I think that's really unfair, I have to say. Every time I do a gig now, I want a medal or a crown.
We've got a Master Tapes merit badge for you at the end of this programme.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the blue
sticker?
Piece. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But do you remember, Eliza, do you remember a first song that you thought, I know how to sing this now and I know the whole thing, you know, that something that became your own?
Well, yes. The first song that me and Dad ever played together was a song that I learned. We can't quite remember where I learned it from, but we think it was a set of tapes in my godmother's house in Northern Ireland. And it was a song called 17 Come Sunday, which
she chose. She chose it.
Right. 17 Come Sunday. Do you remember how it goes?
I do.
Will you play it now?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Ready? You're comfy. Cool. It doesn't look comfy. Go on, play through the pain, Dad. 1, 2, 3, 4.
So that's 17 Come Sunday, the first song that you thought was your own. And let's get back to 2002 and the album Anglicana. And it, in a way, an album that represented a return to your roots, because it followed an album that you'd made for a big mainstream major record label, and you returned to Topic Records. Mm-hmm. And then Topic, of course, have that fantastic back catalogue of the artist dating back decades.
They do.
And you used that archive to compile Anglicana, I suppose it was putting a set list together, really, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Topic Records put out the 20-volume Voice of the People series, and there was so much English music there. I got very, very excited about that, because part of the reason I've always done what I've done is the sort of paucity of traditional English musicians at the time, traditional English music out there for the world to see, kind of thing, was something that really, really bothered me. And the sort of the disconnect, I suppose, of the English people from their old culture was something that I felt very, very deeply right. about.
So there's a real mission statement behind the album.
As there was behind Red Rice as
yeah,
well.
Which had been your big breakthrough album.
Yes, absolutely.
And Martin, did you have a say in what Eliza was doing at the time? I mean, did you...
Not counsel your
opinion at all?
Not really, did you? No, not at all.
I guess I was 23 by that point. There's not a lot you could do.
Right. No, but you never have. You've always gone your own sweet way. And there's absolutely no question of any of us interfering, because we all of us believe that there's nothing you can do to harm traditional music. It's always going to be there. You could do it badly.
Well, Worcester City is the opening track on the album, in fact, isn't it? It almost sets the tone, in a way, a very woeful tale of the lady who is poisoned by the servant boy who's consumed by jealousy love. But given a very contemporary treatment, because it starts with an almost off-kilter rhythm. What's happening there? What were you trying to consciously, at the beginning of the album, say, this is different, I'm presenting a different kind of folk music here?
Well, there are two things to it, really. I mean, when you talk about a dialogue between me and my parents. One of the dialogues that we've always had is to do with folk rock, because people forget that Dad was very, very heavily involved in sort of early folk rock and was one of the first musicians to strap on an electric guitar, for instance. We have very, very strong views about folk rock, and particularly about English rhythm and drums, because the rhythms that we have in this country are very fluid. When you watch traditional dancers, when you watch Morris dancers, there are moments of pause, there are moments of sort of tension and release, if you like, that you cannot get from most modern rock music, especially not if it's to a click, that kind of thing. So when it came to Worcester City and also to Pretty Ploughboy, I had those conversations with the drummer before we even went into the studio. I had long, long conversations with
him
about
it. And they're instructed to follow you then?
Me specifically. Yeah. And that's become a real part of my style, actually, is I make a 12-piece band wait for me.
Yeah. And, yeah. And what is the time signature in that?
Four. Four. Well, I suppose it's a slow three, maybe. It does change. There are bits of five.
Three,
I suppose it's a
three.
Three,
two.
Yeah.
Three, one.
You see, now, and he got confused halfway through as well.
It's a 3-2, yeah, it's a slow three.
In Worcester City there lived a damsel. Now the truth to you I'll tell. She by a servant man was courted, who often told her he loved her well. She loved him true, but at a distance. He did not think to be very fond. Now for you convicts and inconstant lovers, I'll pray you'll learn your sweet tender love. By a young bastard this fair young damsel was invited to a boy and all. This wicked young man he followed after, and to prepare for her overthrow.
String-bustingly brilliant performance. So the rhythm plays a really key part of this album.
It does.
And you're trying to reimagine, remake folk music. And you say that your dad was doing a similar thing back in the day, and of course, take it even further back to the early 60s. And you're passing on the knowledge as well, because, and I mentioned the names Dylan and Paul Simon at the top of the programme, and all those stories of you in the Troubadour Club in West London, and bringing those, that rich tradition of English folk and them hearing it. Did you get a sense that they were soaking it up and taking it off somewhere else?
Bob Dylan was obviously, he was very open about it. He'd sit there and just listen to everybody, and he was absolutely gobbling it up. And it had a fantastic effect on him, I think. He started writing these really anthemic tunes when he went back to the States. He was a piece of blotting paper.
And the same with Paul Simon as well.
Paul Simon...
He does owe you a lot, doesn't he, particularly of Paul Simon?
You have to understand that back in that time, we were all rubbish. And we were all trying to find something which made us different. Davy Graham did Angie. Everybody pounced on Angie, had to learn it. Bert Jansch did, if you like, Strolling Down the Highway. Everybody had to learn Strolling Down the Highway. Right. I did, certainly. And I did Scarborough Fair, and everybody wanted to learn Scarborough Fair. Paul Simon came over to this country sometime in 64, having written a letter to the organiser of Brentwood Folk Club. And he said, "My name is Paul Simon. I'm offering myself as resident at your club every Sunday for £5 a time. How about it?" And those of us who had seen the American performers said, well, the Americans who come over are all good performers because they're taught how to do it at school. Give him a chance. Get playing £5 a week. If he's rubbish, fire him.
Just give us a sense, Martin, of the sort of thing that Paul Simon would have heard there. He's, you know, sitting in the corner of the troubadour, listening to you play. Give us a little burst of Scarborough Fair.
Well, he didn't really come to the troubadour.
Wherever you were playing.
Well, he was... No, he didn't
play
come...
Scarborough Fair, Duff.
Where did you... Oh.
That's what he's saying.
It's grown. Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. For once she was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cambric shirt. Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Without no seam nor needlework. And then she'll be a true love of mine.
But he never actually followed me round the clubs. He was at Brentwood Folk Club. He was the resident.
Right.
So I think he came to the Enterprise in Chalk Farm. And he heard me play it there, and he was very interested in it. And he learned it.
So like did you teach it to him?
No. He just picked it up. I had a long conversation with him about it. And he said, I went back to the States. He said, Art Garfunkel and I were about to split up. Then a producer got hold of us, that song that we had recorded, he and Art Garfunkel had recorded, Sound of Silence, and he put the drum track from another song, from another different artist.
Really?
Put the drum... Oh, yeah.
Ah.
Put the drum... That's what he said to me. Put the drum track onto Sound of Silence. It's not the cleanest marriage you've ever heard, if you listen to it closely. Put the drum track on, and it went to number one. And we were on the point of giving up. That's what he said. Yeah. And he said, and from that moment on, everything I touched turned to gold. And Scarborough Fair was a part of it. He got the job of doing the music for The Graduate.
The rest is history. It's one big family of musicians, really, globally. And I guess you're all rubbing off influences off each other.
Absolutely.
And Eliza, you love folk music. You grew up with folk music. But you've got a very diverse taste, haven't you? I mean, you listen to dance music and drum and bass and all sorts of things. Were you not tempted to go in that direction? Or was it always? Was it just in your blood? Was it just obvious that you had to kind of pursue the folk road?
I just wanted to be a musician, really. And I wanted to be a musician expressing exactly what I was and where I'd come from.
And so let's look at another key track on the album, In London So Fair. I mean, absolutely beautiful, very sparse arrangement Anglicana. And yet another tale of heartbreak and woe.
I do like those.
And it's the love...
They cheer me up.
And this is the one about the lovelorn girl who disguises herself as a sailor when her lover has been sent off to sea. A very strong female protagonist, and there's two or three of those on this album, I think.
Yes, very much so. Well, there's...
Do you seek
them
out?
She wants to be with her lover because he's gone away, but she wants to take care of him, so she only reveals herself to him at the end when he says that he loves her so much that she reminds him of someone that he knows at home, and she's like, actually, well, okay, it's me.
But it's almost tragic comedy, isn't it? I mean, there are some very funny lines in it when she's being sized up and nobody knows that it is a girl, and she being neat and trim, complete in every limb.
I know, she's not
missing
any legs.
And that's a lovely line, isn't it? Because she's got all her arms and legs.
But neat and trim and complete in every limb. It is the only Irish song on the album. there's a beautiful way of poetic expression in a lot of Irish traditional music that I love. That kind of fair of face thing is very lovely and it's very attractive to me.
And a lot of these songs, I mean, they are fantastic stories and they're always ripe for reinterpretation. Is it difficult to write about yourself? Is there an element of you hiding behind these, you know, these old songs? Because
No, it's the opposite. No, it's very much the opposite. Because I see, for instance, and I've said this a lot now, but I see Red as a breakup album. And if you listen to Red, there are songs about waiting for someone to call you. There are songs about saying, oh, you know, you're going to be sorry in a few years kind of thing when you're ugly and I'm still gorgeous. I think the personal expression really shines through in the traditional songs.
What is, of course, one of those albums when you look down the writing credits, and Trad R features pretty heavily,
yes,
doesn't he?
He's a clever chap.
Yeah, the traditional songs with the new arrangements. And the one exception on this song is the one that you gave us a burst of at the top of the programme, which is Dr. Mukumbi, which is Doctor and then Muk and then MBE. And this is a tribute to your father.
Dr. MCMBE is what it stands for.
Because you are Martin, you are Dr. Martin.
The year of Anglicana was the year I got an honorary doctorate of music from Sheffield University.
Yes, and an MBE.
I got that. That was 98. You do get a medal eventually.
Yeah.
But what happens when? And I'm getting back to this Dr. Mukumbi song. When it's just Eliza, it's just you and your dad playing together. And when you are playing together, and blood, you know, the music is flowing through your blood. Does it help being part of the same family?
Is there something
passing between you in the air as well?
It seems that we know what to do, when to slow down, when to speed up. I mean, Swarb and I could do it to a certain extent because we've known each other for so long, but it's not quite the same. The level, you can do it immediately.
I've always taken it for granted. I've never quite understood just how gobsmacked Dad has always been about playing with me and singing with the Watersons, and the fact that there is a difference to it.
The thing about it is you actually have to learn to shut up. Just shut up and listen, because it's there. The rule with the Watersons was you sing the melody until you can't, then you sing a harmony. And and suddenly if I obeyed that rule, it was a piece of cake.
And getting back to Dr. Mukumbi, it's a tune which showcases your respective talents. Martin, your finger-picking on the guitar. And a beautiful violin fiddle line, Eliza. And is it a melody which is evoking a sense of your father? When, you know, do you compose that or do you improvise it? Well, how did that tune first come about? And maybe you should just show us again how the two parts work, as you did at the top of the programme.
Well, it's the way that Dr. Mukumbi works for me is that I was told by Dad that the nominators for his MBE were not English, that they were Scots. That's why I call it Dr. Mukumbi.
Yes.
So if I go... That bit there is kind of like a Strathspey for me. That's kind of like a Scottish way of phrasing things. The rest of it comes from wanting irregular beats and the things that I associate with Dad, the slides, the rhythmic stops. I wanted something that sort of lolloped, but was emotional at the same time.
So you're painting a picture when you're composing that piece of music. You have him in mind.
I do.
And you see the way he moves as well. And so that music suggests the movement.
It's a lullaby. It's a lullaby because he's my father, but it's also rhythmic and dancey in parts and dramatic. And I wanted it to encompass sort of everything that I felt about him in three parts.
And did you tell him what to play, or does he just instinctively know?
Oh, no,
he just fills in behind you.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I'll occasionally say, is that right? And she'll go, yes. Well, that'll do.
Well, you're going to play us out of this programme with a version of the song Pretty Ploughboy, another song with a strong female protagonist. This time she doesn't have to dress up, disguise herself, because she goes laden with gold.
That's right.
And he's been sent off. This is a song of punishment. He's been sent off to be slain in war.
Well, her parents don't like him.
Yeah.
So basically they sick the press gang on him. I mean, Dad talks about the life expectancies of sailors in certain wars being less than 3 months. So they were always looking for new men.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's a song about defying social norms as well, isn't it? About a born rebel.
Very much so, yes. She's not having any of it. And she has her own money, which is quite rare as well.
Which is, I mean, a recurring theme in a lot of folk music. And Martin, you know this as well, don't you? I mean, that you are singing on behalf very often of the underdog.
Oh, yeah.
And that tradition... And is that, was that always important for you, that it is telling an alternate history almost of... of England?
I suppose so. I mean, wisdom of hindsight, yes. I just went for that kind of a song intuitively, and then the politics of it became attached to it later on.
When I think about national heritage, I don't think about paying to get into someone else's building. This is my building, and it's free, and I can occupy it any way I choose.
And so can anybody.
And so can anyone.
You're talking about the castles, the stately homes, rather than BBC Maid of Vale, of course. Well, that's all we've got time for in this first part of the programme. Eliza Carthy, Martin Carthy, thank you both very much for joining us on Master Tapes. Well, there's a lot more to discuss with Eliza and Martin about the album Anglicana, about the folk tradition and indeed the folk future. In the second part, the B-side, our studio audience here at Maid of Vale will be posing the questions. You can hear that tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 on Radio 4. This edition will be available to listen to and download via the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website, where you can see videos of some of the exclusive performances from this and previous series. In the meantime, though, Eliza Carthy's going to play us out with Pretty Ploughboy from the album Anglicana.
It's a very brisk young ploughboy. He was ploughing on the plain, and his horses stood down in yonder shade. It was down in yonder grove I went whistling to his plough, and by chance there he met a pretty maid, pretty maid. And by chance there he met a pretty maid. And when her aged parents, they both came for to know that her lord he was flying on the plain. They sent for the press gang, and they sent her lover away. They sent him to the wars to be slain, to be slain. Oh, they sent him to the wars to be slain.
And if you want to hear more material recorded at this Master Tape session, including exclusive performances, photographs and videos, go to the Master Tapes pages via the Radio 4 website.